Hi, and welcome to the PodMag, our monthly news podcast from the Faculty of Social Sciences at the Open University. I'm Karen Foley, and in this June edition, I'm interviewing Belinda Tynan, Rose Capdevila, and Nicola Yates. But first, here's the news from the faculty in June. Top news, we have a new Vice-Chancellor, Peter Horrocks, and he's making quite an impact at the university. And at our recent Charter Day, the Open University's birthday celebrations, he spoke about how important part-time education is, and also about the importance of putting students first as the university develops. You can find out more on the Open University's Facebook page and on Twitter. And at Charter Day, we also celebrated the university's Teaching Awards, and we accepted the award for innovation for the Student Connections Project, of which this PodMag is a part. They were presented by our Pro Vice-Chancellor for Teaching and Learning, Belinda Tynan, and I'd like to say on behalf of all the team that it's a great honour to receive these awards and to have our work recognised. And on another thank you note, we'd like to thank all the students who've responded to the National Student Survey. We really do appreciate the time it takes, and these results are very important to the university. We're delighted with the 92% satisfaction rating, and once again, social sciences have been placed among the highest subject areas for student satisfaction. The responses from the survey, though, also give us an opportunity to reflect on student views, and as a result, we're currently thinking about how we can improve the quality of your learning experience, and also about how we can make your qualifications more relevant in terms of employment. And here are some events on in June that may be of interest in the regions and nations, as well as, of course, at the Open University in Milton Keynes. Do remember that many of these events are open to the public. So first, on the 3rd of June, at the OU in Milton Keynes, there's an event called Process Approaches Between Psychology and the Social Sciences. On the 4th of June, there's an event in Edinburgh at the OU in Scotland. And it's a CSIG and OU Scotland Knowledge Exchange on a UK referendum on Europe. On the 10th of June, in the afternoon, at the Open University Library in Milton Keynes, Michael Pryke and John Allen have a seminar. They'll focus on some of the policy research that they have done, which has featured recently on the Channel 4 documentary Selling Off Britain. It's an open space event, so if you'd like to come along, email openspace@open.ac.uk. And then, on the 26th of June, there's an all-day event at the OU in London called Money, Debt and Finance Towards a Political Economy of Financial Innovation. It's the first workshop from the Open University's Political Economy Group. It's open to all and is funded by the IKD, so if you want to attend, please email socsci-ikd-events@open.ac.uk because spaces are limited. Right, well first, I'm off to the Charles Pinfold Building to see our Pro Vice-Chancellor for Learning and Teaching, Professor Belinda Tynan. So hi Belinda, how's it going? Really busy time of year, how are you?
Oh look, it's an incredibly busy time of year, but I'm good, I'm really great. And as we head down towards the summer, although I'm really looking forward to the summer, I'm happy being busy as well.
Yeah, so last time I saw you was Charter Day, and my goodness, there was a lot going on then. Tell us, how was that for you?
Charter Day is such fun, isn't it? Mm. Remember last year we sort of put in the teaching awards and we had videos by all the different awardees? We did the same thing again this year. We had a whole bunch of teams and people. And of course, social sciences won one of those.
Yeah, I know.
You know, for the connections work that you've been doing with students. So I'm very pleased to be able to present that to you and the team. But no, it's really special to be able to celebrate, you know, what people are doing in their teaching. And we've got some really talented teachers out there. I mean, some of the innovation that we saw on that day, that's only a tip of the iceberg of what's actually happening out in the university.
Yeah, and it was the first time, of course, we heard our new Vice-Chancellor talk. So how's it going with him then?
He's amazing. He's so kind of, it's not that he's not frantic per se, but he's kind of really inquisitive, you know, and so he's asking lots of questions and talking to us all, and he's meeting all the faculties, and he just seems to be everywhere at once, which I think is absolutely fantastic. He's really picking up on what all the issues are for the university and where the opportunities are. And he's been sort of playing with three ideas at the moment that sit around the themes of being more simple, because, you know, we all have a moan about the bureaucracy, so how can we make things more simple? He's really keen on getting our innovation into practice. So we could use the teaching awards as a great example. If you think about, you know, all that innovation that was on the stage there, how do we then cascade that? How do we sort of share those learnings with others and you know, push it out into the university? And then, of course, value. He's really interested in making sure that what we do offer for our students is value for money, but also value in other ways as well, just sort of not necessarily in that financial way. And the two big phrases that you probably start hearing a lot is certainly part-time matters and students first.
How do you think this is going to shift your remit then for the future?
What is really exciting about it is all the stuff we've been doing in learning, teaching, vision and plan is very much aligned with the sorts of things that Peter's been saying. So I think for us it's going to be quite easy because we're already starting to map with faculties what they're doing. We're trying to draw out the innovation. Staff have been asking us for a long time about, you know, where can they experiment and how can they get out from underneath the bureaucracy. So I think it's going to sit really well and I'm really looking forward to the future. So I think he's going to start laying out those plans over the next sort of 3 to 5 months. It's going to be a really exciting time period, but from everything I see thus far, everyone's responding so well to it. And you know, and especially after we had such a strong leader prior, you know, with Martin, Peter's just come in, he's very different, he's got a different approach, he loves talking with people, and people are really responding well to that. And I think he's really going to get underneath the skin of the university quickly. At Charter Day, he said that he would really love the university, and I think he will. He's going to be a great leader.
Oh, well, thank you very much for the time. That's been brilliant.
It's my pleasure. Speak to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Oh, well, that's great to have some news from the university. And now back to social sciences. And I'm going to call Rose Capdevilla to find out about this new chip tool she's been working on as part of the psychology programme. Hi, Rose. You've been involved with the new chip tool that's replaced Epoch. It's a resource that helps psychology students visualise the interconnections between psychologists through time, and it's been updated now to make the most of new technology as well as adding layers of new connections. Can you tell us what you find most exciting about this new tool?
Well, some of the people listening to this might not be familiar with Epoch, but it was a great tool that looked at the history of psychology and the relationships between psychologists and their approaches. Unfortunately, the software for it became outdated, but it was such a rich resource, we wanted to find some way to make the information accessible to students. So we took the data from Epoch and completely revisualized it. The new resource, which is called Investigating Psychology, appears as a star field. Every star or node is color-coded to represent a person, a context, a perspective, or a method. Through the links between the nodes, the tool lets you explore the development of psychological thinking, not only across time, but also within the context of social, conceptual, and historical changes. It also allows you to follow the development and application of different perspectives and methods, and through chains of influence between researchers. Lastly, it has this narratives function, which represents specific paths you can take through the information, a bit like Google Maps takes you from one point to another. It's a completely open resource, thanks to OpenLearn, and so absolutely anyone can use it. It was recently launched at the annual BPS conference and it's now ready to use as a tool for anyone teaching or learning CHIP. Another important feature is that it can be continually updated. Just see the email list link at the bottom if you have suggestions for any new material.
It's a fantastic resource. And of course, when we're structuring modules, we often use these themes or questions to underpin the chapters. And in psychology, it's important to understand how ideas and practices have evolved and how they're culturally situated. So, Rose, how do you think that students will use this tool to consolidate some of these aspects?
The Investigating Psychology resource has been integrated into the teaching of psychology. As production chair for D200, the level 2 core module on the psychology qualification, I can speak best about that. We have a number of activities in which students will have the opportunity to become familiar with the resource by following up questions around the conceptual and historical issues in psychology. For instance, around the influences on and from psychology from other disciplines in other areas, or how different contexts facilitated the involvement of women. Towards the end of the module, we encourage students to go to the resource to investigate the different methods and themes they could be using to complete their dissertations in D300. At the same time, it's an open resource, so I would encourage students just to go there and investigate and follow up the links and whatever they find interesting and are curious about.
You've mentioned your involvement with the level 2 and 3 psychology modules that are being written at the moment. But aside from this new tool, can you tell us what psychology students can look forward to in terms of the programme you're working on?
Although we have an accompanying 3-volume text, D200 has been designed as a VLE-driven module, so there are lots of great online resources, audio, visual, and interactive exercises. The module is organized around 2 closely intertwined themes, asking questions, and working across boundaries. Each week, the module asks an everyday question that can be answered by looking to psychological theories and research, such as, can we do two things at once? Why do we like one another? Why do we help one another? What is the point of childhood? The module highlights that in asking specific questions, psychologists often have to rely on different subdisciplines. For instance, students will learn how, in order to help patients who have suffered a stroke, psychologists will draw on biological, cognitive, developmental, and social psychological approaches. Students will also be learning how to conduct research. They will be able to participate in original research, replicate classic studies, see research in action, hear directly from active researchers, and reflect on the research process. We're all really excited about the module and looking forward to its first presentation in the autumn.
Thanks very much for that, Rose. It sounds really exciting, and I'm sure that our psychology students will find it very useful. And time for one last interview. And this time, I'm calling Nicola Yates. I want to ask her about this research project she's doing that's getting so much attention. So, hi, Nicola. Now, you're the head of department for social policy and criminology, and also you're involved in an exciting ERSC research project that I wanted to talk to you about today. So can you tell us a little bit about your role in this project and where you're at with it?
Yes, of course. It's a two-year project. We're looking at poverty reduction and regional integration within South America and Southern Africa. So my role is as a PI, so I am basically the project director. So I'm leading the project in collaboration with four other research institutes and university based in Europe, in South America and Southern Africa. And the Open University is the lead institution. We're about halfway through the project at this stage. So we're currently at the very exciting stage of collating our data, our research findings, and looking to see what some of the emerging trends and findings and conclusions are. We're also setting up a series of workshops, policy workshops, for later in the year, and they're spread across the principal research sites in Ecuador, Botswana, Argentina, and South Africa. So there we'll be talking to our various communities of stakeholders.
Your real concern, though, is in social policy. And so here it's about the effects in terms of health policy. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the things that you're looking at specifically?
Yeah, so some of the things we're looking at in particular are looking at the potential benefits of regional integration insofar as they relate to health policy. So we know, for example, that regional integration can, for example, amplify the voices of smaller and developing countries in global policy making. We know that they can galvanize support for and foster ownership of regionally defined rules and standards, and that can frame the particular ways and set standards for national policymakers. We know that they can pool resources and risks to help scale up social protection and health and thereby reach a much greater proportion of the population. And we know that they can create platforms and fora for member states to discuss key priorities, what their key priorities are for regional action and to work out context-specific responses. So we're interested in the benefits of regional integration, but we're also actually interested in what member states through these regional fora are actually doing in practice. And that's the real research focus of this particular project.
You're also interested in whether there is a pro-poor policy in place in these regional organisations that you're looking at. Can you tell us why that is important?
That's right. Well, it matters, I think, because quite simply, there are so many people living in conditions of extreme poverty globally. There are still 1.2 billion people living in poverty who do require much better support by all development partners at local, national, and international levels. And it also matters, I think, because we just can't take it for granted that public policies, social policies, and health policies actually do reduce poverty, or that they address people who are living in specific conditions of poverty. So we can't take it for granted that public policies will reach people living in poverty at all. So we're looking at this not only in terms of what regional policymakers are actually saying about what it is they're going to be doing, we're also looking at their experiences of regional health policymaking as practice. So are they actually doing in practice what they say they will do in principle? And all of this matters within a much broader global context because of the current dialogues and discussions going on around the next phase of the Millennium Development Goals. So in September of this year, in 2015, all governments will be meeting to approve a set of commitments for the next 15 or so years of global development policy and practice. And those are called the Sustainable Development Goals. So that's a really key and really significant moment within global policy making that we as a project can make contributions to, because one of the areas that have been neglected has been the ways in which regional organizations as kind of intermediate actors between national governments and global organizations can actually have a much more effective set of contributions to make in terms of delivering pro-poor, pro-social equity policies regarding access to health and medicines.
Thanks, Nicola Yates. That's really interesting and valuable research, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it develops.
Okay, all right. Thanks very much for that, Karen. Bye.
And that's all we have time for here today, so let me remind you how to keep in touch. Your qualifications website will give you the information about student connections, and you can also keep in touch on Twitter at OUSOCSI. There's also our faculty Facebook page with the Friday Thinker each week, and if you want to email us, we're podmag@open.ac.uk. That's all from me, Karen Foley. Bye for now, and thanks for listening.